Welcome to Dazer Update for May 10th, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Dan Rivittorio.
And yeah, we've had a big week of news, mostly industry news. Mm-hmm. A lot of things have been happening here.
Oh, yeah.
We have some layoffs. We have publishers making stupid moves. We have GameStop wanting to do, let's say, something that's unattainable. Doing some very stupid stuff.
Sure, let's go with that.
Then we got some Nintendo news.
Oh, yeah.
They had a last-minute Direct for a game that's coming out next month.
Yeah, and reactions are, I want to say, divided.
Yeah. We also have... let's see, we got a long-awaited indie game coming out here in a few weeks. And, yeah, a bunch of other stuff happening as well. So before we get to that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll mm-hmm. kick it off here. I've been playing more Sarus. I have beaten the first boss. Still like it a lot. Does some interesting stuff when you beat that first boss. Essentially opens up the fast travel system, I guess. Or like a teleport system that takes you back to the base area to, mm-hmm. you know, inject some more story stuff into it. You should get some instructions from the mother style bot mm-hmm. that kind of sends you out again and go into this next area, which is more of an underground. Like machine style area, mm-hmm. lots of like machines and metal tunnels and all this kind of stuff. I think this seems like where the tutorial area kind of must be taking place. So yeah, explored a good bit and then eventually just died to some random group of enemies.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, nothing too much was. Really added here, as far as I could tell. Like mechanics wise, you do unlock these jump pads essentially. That kind of now allow you to get to some higher up areas.
Mm-hmm.
So that certainly helps out. And when I go back to the early areas, there are some definite places where those are at, and they're just not working yet. So that'll be fun to check out. So yeah, there's that. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've played of that so far.
Mm-hmm.
I did get Pokemon Pokopia in from Gamefly, which weirdly took like 2 weeks to arrive versus I think Pragmata was like 2 days, which is normal.
Mm-hmm.
Shipping out, you know, out of Pittsburgh. That's not far from me. This one took 2 weeks for whatever reason, so I just got it a couple days ago. And I've been playing that, and yeah, it's a pretty good game. It's very much one of those, I would say, crafting kind of games. Not really any survival elements to it. As you know, you're playing a Ditto that liked their trainer so much that when they showed up here, they kind of took the form of their trainer. Kind of are doing this... human-like stuff while ingesting moves from the various Pokemon that you kind of get into your camp. Mm-hmm. You're kind of constantly setting up these potential habitats for these various Pokemon,
mm-hmm.
to which you kind of get hints of, oh, if you set up, you know, one of these, you may get, you know, this Pokemon in that has, you know, this special ability that you may need, that kind of stuff. So I'm at the point where I can build things, I can, you know, cut stuff and all that, so I've, you know, brought water into some areas where they're kind of blocked off by, you know, one pesky rock block that, you know, needs to be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff, so yeah, been enjoying that when I can play it. So that's been pretty fun so far.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, been playing some more Vampire Crawlers as I'm kind of working my way through a bunch of the harder stages. trying to figure out the right crawlers to take in with that. I've finished the first of the bridge stages, which are sort of the only linear stages in this game, where you're not going through floors, you're going through these fights that honestly go on for a while, because you're just fighting a bunch of waves of enemies. And it can be pretty tough early on, especially as you're, you know, have not upgraded much of your stats, that kind of stuff. So I eventually took some runs at it and found the right crawler that kind of worked their way through it. That was fun. Now I'm working my way through I forget what it's called, the milk factory.
Yeah.
Which is a whole weird place that took me down in like the second floor, because I went in with the wrong one that did not have any real defensive capabilities. So I was just constantly taking damage and not getting any health back, blocking any of it. So that was a tactical error, but still liking this game a lot. I've been playing more of the Survivalists. Finally got a stream of the DLC, Frostbite Fortress. The main game is, you know, based on these sort of tropical islands and all that, and they're... big DLC features a teleporter that teleports you to an alternate area that is in a, you know, huge ice and snow covered area, from which, you know, you are dealing with some harsh terrain. And this is not one of those kind of crafting survival games where you build armor for yourself, at least not that I've seen so far. At this point, I've had a few monkeys now that can automate a lot of the crafting and all that for me. So I've been just having them do that and build some defenses of the area that I'm starting in. And so that's been pretty fun. But it also is an area where, you know, a lot of the resources you might need to build a lot of the early, you know, crafting tables and all that are not available. Like, no sand to make glass. It's, you know, a frost covered area. And when you're on any surface that isn't grass, your character is sort of taking cold damage. And well, just you're like crackling ice as you're on it. Take some health damage every 10 seconds or so, whatever it is. You can, you know, build back with food and all that, but it kind of wears down at a certain point. But I do have some good areas scoped out to just kind of book it between my base and some of these other areas to gather the materials that I can get. So that's been pretty fun. But yeah, it is a much harder area to start in, especially not having like mastered the main world. So they rate all of the areas by, you know, 1 to 4 or 1 to 5 stars. Essentially, you know, you start on 1-star areas, and I got into some 2-star and 3-star areas. And this DLC sends you to an area that is immediately a 3-star area. So you have rocks that you can't break easily. You have to have a higher level, you know, pickaxe. All that stuff. Luckily, they give you a chest that has some of that stuff for you. So you kind of get a little ahead of you there. There's crystals that you can get, but you need to make potions that allow you to collect them. That's a little interesting that they have it done that way. So I'm going to have to make sure I make some potions every so often. They last for a few minutes, so you get some time to collect stuff. But yeah, it's a pretty neat little twist on the gameplay of the main game, especially for DLC that they released, I want to say like 4 or 5 years after the main game. Yeah, about 5.5 years. It was October 2020. And they released the Frostbite Fortress a few weeks ago. And like, they haven't really added anything else DLC wise. The other one they have is called Monkey Business, which I think just adds more cosmetics for your monkeys, more hats and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, not really a ton of content there for that. But I could be wrong. I'm not sure if there's... Yeah, I think that is it. But yeah, that's a cool piece of DLC. Especially if you want some added challenge to it. Especially if you've played more than I have. I jumped in at like 8-9 hours once I had the materials to make it. And it's like, oh boy. Especially annoying because you have to, the way you set up the monkeys to, you know, do the chores that you want them to do. You can't just leave them in an area and like go back to the main world and grab the stuff you need and come back. They follow you everywhere. So then you have to keep resetting up their you know, abilities that you want them to do. So that's kind of thing that's very annoying. But that's the kind of game this is either way. But yeah, that's the Survivalist Frostbite Fortress DLC. Then the last game I've been playing some of is Cozy Marbles. There's a playtest for it on Steam now. And so I did a stream for that. And it's essentially, as you might be able to guess, you're kind of making courses for marbles to go through. The playtest has one area, which is a smaller area, that is essentially like a big table that you can set this stuff up on. And you see there's like a recreation room that you're in. And you're essentially creating these elaborate, they can be elaborate, they can be pretty simple courses for this stuff that with the, they don't allow all the pieces in the game in the playtest yet. There's some more wild stuff that's hidden away, like they have a cannon that can shoot the ball across the course, whatever you're looking to do with it. You know, like elevators, that kind of stuff, because there is a you set up a goal for the end and kind of build from, you know, beginning to end. But you can also get a lap marker kind of thing to have multiple laps going on, which, you know, isn't really working when I think the only vertical piece you have is this circular thing that is essentially like a windmill of sorts, but it has little circular slots on it for balls to go into. So I've built one that was just how many of these can I get to get it back up to as high as I have a point that, you know, you can build at, and it took me like three of them. But you also have to deal with how the physics work and all that, and I realized the first thing I had set up was kind of this long straight path, and it's at a certain point while they're waiting for their space, that flat path kind of just lets them sit there, and they, there would be, if I'm doing a bunch at once, it's like a race kind of thing, like the last third of the field just sits there and never advances. So you only get like so many of them finishing. So yeah, there's some ways that I could build better, but you can also upload those courses to Steam Workshop, share with others, and a handful of people have done that so far. But yeah, you have a bunch of like wooden pieces. There are little metal railings that can guide things around. Like there is dispensers that can do like a field of them, of marbles dropping onto the field. You can do singles dispensers and kind of build like a mirrored course kind of thing if you want, or, you know, have them zigzag between each other, like a, you know, a destruction derby kind of race course kind of thing. There's a bunch of interesting pieces in there that can be combined in some interesting ways. And for this playtest, there's challenges that are just like some basic things of like launch this many balls from your dispenser. It's like 5,000, which even the amount of time I've played in, especially doing a lot of the bigger dispenser stuff, I maybe got to about halfway on that. Because the fun thing you can also do is just build like half a, build out your course, and then you can start having the balls go through, sort of test out how everything works, and you know, work your way around that. You can also just sit there and just keep spawning balls in, kind of keep going through and just making a mess, because they, when they fall off your course, they just roll around on the table.
Yeah.
So you can just create a huge mess of these marbles rolling around all over the place that obviously will tank your frame rate at a certain point, but still pretty fun thing to do with that kind of thing. So yeah, it's definitely rough around the edges as you're building out this course. But it seems like it's got a lot of potential, and they have some of the other areas they'll have are much larger areas to build in, and like the pieces that show up is not available yet. There's some pretty good stuff. Like you got the big funnel kind of thing that goes down one hole. It'd be pretty fun to see how a lot of that stuff turns out in the final game, but this looks pretty cool so far. So if you want to check that out, they have a playtest going on now for that. That's being published by Mythrite, made by Pixel P Games. So yeah, that's supposed to be out later this year. So that's what I'm kind of looking forward to. There's been a few games in this vein about building, you know, these kind of marble courses, and this one takes a more relaxed tilt to that. So it's a pretty neat one of these. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been playing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, mainly right now I'm playing a secret game, one that I cannot talk about just yet. Other than to say that I'm enjoying it. But when I'm done with that and I'm ready to talk about it, you will hear it. However, outside of that, I'm still playing Splatoon 3. The last couple of nights, I've been taking part in the extra work part of Salmon Run. Typically in Salmon Run, when you're doing one of those, what ends up happening is, you know, you and a team of four, you get plopped into, you know, whatever the location of the day is going to be, and you're given three waves of enemies you have to do, collect the golden eggs, blah, 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 blah. In extra work, what you instead do is they make one cycle that repeats ad nauseum, basically. Five waves. It's all five waves. Each wave has its own specific group of enemies that show up, and you have to get progressively more and more golden eggs into, you know, the egg chute. But after every wave, the difficulty of the difficulty of the overall level increases exponentially to points that even like the base game, as hard as it can be, does not go to. One other thing, so yeah, it's the same five waves with the same enemies over and over and over again. And what this does is, among other things, it lets you, you know, gather up a bunch of you know, points and stuff, so you can go up on you know, you can level up and stuff. It also, unlike regular jobs, it there is no risk of having a pay cut if you end up losing. So yeah, it's like that. And also on top of that, I'm also playing Trails Beyond the Horizon again, because I had been neglecting that because I had been playing Death Stranding 2, and now that's all over and behind me. I'm now back into that game. I'm back into that universe. It's old. It feels like an old, comfortable couch every time I go back there. Yeah, I'm just happy to be back in that world again. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So, Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, playing quite a few games. A couple of them are redacted, but I can go ahead and reveal one of those redacted games to be Forza Horizon 6. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you what I think about it yet, so we'll save that for another time. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I finished Inconbini, One Store, Many Stories, last week. And yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit, but I will say that it wasn't, it also wasn't what I hoped or thought it would be. If you read my preview or listened to the show last week, I mentioned that I first saw this game at Day of the Devs during GDC last year, and unfortunately, I couldn't get to play it just because like it was so busy, it was so noisy, and like it's really really hard to play any sort of game, especially a cozy game when it's really really noisy, despite having the headphones. And it was definitely something that I wanted to focus on. So when I actually first got my hands on it, it was during Steam Next Fest a few months ago, and I really really liked what I played. The game follows the main character who sort of takes over a Japanese convenience store for her aunt for about a week while she's out doing while she's out on vacation. And this game kind of like presents itself to be sort of a grocery store simulator. It's not really that at all. It's more something along the lines of a coffee talk where you're running the shop, but it's really all about the customers that come in and you learn about the things going on in their lives. That being said, like there's still stuff to do around the shop. You have to take care of the back stock, put it all out, make sure all of your inventory is facing the right direction and is in the right place. But that being said, like it's not really something you really have to do or put that much of a focal point on, because the way the flow goes is, you start your day, you go ahead and see what the previous staff has left you so you can go ahead and pick up their slack. But at the same time, you're given agency to open up the shop whenever you want. And you can choose to do it right away. You can choose to do it after you've done the tasks that have been left behind for you. It doesn't matter. The main thing is like, I don't know, like I don't know how many of you have worked retail, but it's typically a regular to high stress job because you do have to make sure that things are maintained, and at the same time, you're giving the customers all the attention you can give them. So an inconvenience. When a customer is asking for help, you can flat out leave them there. It does not matter. You can go ahead and focus on making sure all the ice cream is stocked and have them wait 15 minutes, and there is no sort of penalty for any of the choices that you make. So you can have an old person wait at the ramen section at for a certain suggestion on a certain cup ramen to get, and leave them there, and all of a sudden just pick up where you left off. They won't get mad at you. They won't mention how long it took, and that's pretty much that. And after you help them and after you ring them up, they move, they go along, they go about their day, and you wait for the next customer to come in. So, you can do anything in any order. There is no stress whatsoever. And I get that that's the point of a cozy game, but I'm like, all right, you gotta like give me some sort of a reason to do what I'm doing in a faster pace. But yeah, again, it's a cozy game, and there's nothing really to expect out of there. So, as I mentioned, the game is really all about the customers that come in and the lives that they lead. So you'll see this old man who you find out actually has a sort of a budding romantic connection with your aunt. So you try to get to know him more in that regard. You meet this little boy who's 12 years old who is running his own delivery service. So he is essentially pretty much being Instacart in the 90s, which is definitely a pretty cool thing to do. And when you ring him up, he asks you to give him his change all in quarters so that he's able to participate in this gacha machine game on the outside, which is something that you could also do on your own. And like the funny thing is, in regards to using your money to play with the gacha machine, there's no way to like actually earn more of it. You're giving a finite amount of coins per day, and the way you find it is by looking through your jacket every day. So again, like there really isn't much of a reason to do anything other than moving forward on your own account. Again, that's great, but at the end of the day, it's hard to really recommend something that doesn't really have any sort of call to action for what you're doing. That being said, you go through about six shifts. You do learn about everyone there, and it's a really nice and pleasurable experience. They did a really really solid job with this game, but at I think it's around $30. I wouldn't recommend it at that. I'd probably go somewhere along 10, But if you have Xbox or PC Game Pass, this game is free with that service for a little while. So yeah, I can recommend it if you're looking for a different kind of cozy game to play. And as somebody who enjoys the cozy genre, like I am tired of everything being about farming or, building your neighborhood. And like this definitely falls in my wheelhouse. I just wish there was a little bit more challenge and stuff to do. But it's still a game that I'd recommend overall. Secondly, the game that I couldn't talk about last week, I can freely talk about now, is Mixtape. And if you've been on the internet or any sort of like gaming media for the past few days, this game is a talk of the town, and it is very well deserving of it. On Smashpad, I gave it a 5. I have not given a 5 since Tears of the Kingdom. So yeah, like it goes to show how much I enjoyed this one. For those of you that haven't heard about it, this one is published by Annapurna, developed by Beethoven and Dinosaur, the people that brought us The Artful Escape. And I'll tell you right now, I did not really enjoy The Artful Escape. The reason why I enjoyed Mixtape was because I feel like the story that Beethoven and Dinosaur were trying to tell was a whole lot better in narrative 3D than it was in 2D, because there were definitely a lot of similar DNA between the two. But I found Mixtape to be way more enjoyable. The game follows a cast of three people who are pretty much like living their last day together. The slogan for this game is "Nothing but the hits." And like the real theme about Mixtape is, I don't know how many of you guys like watch The Office, but there is this quote that trying to remember, Andy Bernard says that, he wishes you can tell that you're in the good old days before you're actually left them. And like this is pretty much what Mixtape is. Like, if you've enjoyed any of the films from John Hughes, whether it be Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Breakfast Club, 16 Candles, that sort of thing, Mixtape is very similar in that regard. You see, you learn about a whole bunch of suburban, and I hate to put it this way, but suburban white kids who pretty much just like live their high school lives the way they want it to be. There's the jock, there's the nerd, and whatever it may be. And Mixtape is really about a bunch of degenerates. The main character, Stacy Rockford, is an autophile, to tell you the least. And basically, tomorrow or the next day, she'll be leaving on a trip to New York to pursue her passions in music curation. And like that's the theme this game follows throughout the entire time. It's called Mixtape because every single section in the game is going to be played with a different song in the background, and the genres are pretty much transcended. You're gonna have, light rock from the past, modern heavier rock. You have groups like Devo, Smashing Pumpkins, Iggy Pop, Roxy Music. Just the entire soundtrack is absolutely fantastic. To be honest, I don't know who half the bands are. I know my Smashing Pumpkins, I know my Devo, but there is a lot of cool music to really explore here. The soundtrack is phenomenal. If you're somebody who streams and tries to make money streaming, you're not going to do it here because you'll be taken down immediately. But yeah, it's just a great experience. Every vignette has like some sort of different kind of gameplay going on. There's one pretty fun part where it's just an endless runner where you want to try to jump and dodge at the right times. There's another one where this is probably the most viral one, where Stacy goes through her first kiss, and you end up controlling two tongues poking at each other with the left and right stick. Absolutely hilarious and gross. And if you do that for more than 60 seconds, you get a trophy or achievement for doing that. So yeah, a lot of like tongue-in-cheek comedy going on with this one. As for like how the game plays in general, it's pretty much what you'd expect from something like Life is Strange, that kind of narrative gameplay with a lot of quick time elements and things like that. But yeah, the game is also really, really short. You can beat the game in maybe 2.5, 3 hours. I logged 6 hours into the game, primarily because I've sort of beaten it twice on my way to getting the platinum. You can go ahead and get the platinum without beating it twice, but it's just easier to just go through the different chapters in the game. And yeah, everything is enjoyable in various ways. The pacing is fantastic, and I really, really enjoyed everything about the game. The one thing that I do have to call out is pretty much in the way its stop motion visual style goes. Like there's a point in the game where you run around a forest, and The visual style does this thing where the characters are very much like what you've seen in movies like the Spider-Verse movies or K-pop Demon Hunters, where the main focal points of the camera are going to focus on like the main characters, and they'll move at like 15 frames per second, whereas like the rest of the environment goes at a full 60, and like that sort of inconsistency, and like it works most of the time. But when you were like running in the forest, for example, they looked pretty much out of place, kind of like how Final Fantasy VII or Resident Evil 2 back on the PlayStation 1 used to look in regards to putting live characters on pre-rendered backgrounds. It was great back then, not so good now. But at that point, like I'm really nitpicking. There really isn't much to say that I believed would be negative. Like I've seen some discourse from people calling this game white Venba. I've seen people call like woke and whatever it may be. And like this game is about a whole bunch of white people, so I don't really see any sort of wokeness to it. If I ever even have that kind of spectrum of thought.
Yeah, the conspiracy I keep hearing is that this thing was like an industry plant or something. Like it
Which is
was.
wild, right? Because like Johnny Galvatron, even though he's definitely a game developer, like he is totally music first, and like having that sort of thought of as far as having a plan. And like I get that a lot of people like thought that this game came out of nowhere and like is like getting the good reviews it is just like out of basic and lame principle. But again, like I played this game last year and I knew it was going to be a hit. I didn't know it was going to get all the tens it was getting. And in fact, I gave my own, but at the same time, like I'm a minority. I wasn't as ratchet as these kids when I was in high school, but I do have appreciation for the music. I do have appreciation for the way the stories were told. I'm not the biggest John Hughes fan in the world, but I definitely do enjoy the movies that I've seen from his. So, I translate all of that to mixtape. I don't think this is a game that can ever be replicated, even if Beethoven and Dinosaur wanted to do their own thing with a different genre of music entirely. Like, I feel like once they do that, it'll automatically be compared to mixtape and it'll automatically be worse as a result. I don't think this can ever be encapsulated ever again, and that's part of why I gave it a timeless score. But yeah, very enjoyable. The game is $20, very much worth it. And just like Inconvenie, if you have Xbox or PC Game Pass, it's a free option there as well. But yeah, that's about it for me.
I would say if you like the store management aspect of Inconvenie and want more of that, there's a bunch of stuff like that on Steam. Especially
Gotcha.
stuff like PCG Card Shop Simulator, I think is the prototype of what you might like about that game. You're managing inventory and all that. You're actually having to manage your inventory
I think
versus.
one thing that really makes Inconvenie special, and if there's a game like this in regards to what I'm talking about, feel free to recommend it. But I think the endless charm comes from the fact that it's a Japanese convenience store, and their convenience store culture is just above and beyond what you'd see in almost any other country. But yeah, like I've definitely considered like a TCG Card Shop Simulator. Like, that one definitely looks fun.
There's a billion of those kind of games on Steam, so there's probably more anime-oriented stuff or that, but in that game probably will cause somebody to be like, well, let's just make the simulator where you just run the convenience store. There could already be something like that. There's different like supermarket simulator type things on there, so there is some of that out there. I think where you run like a ramen shop, that kind of stuff. I don't know necessarily what all is good, but
That's fun.
yeah, you can run lots of different restaurant types and all that. So yeah, there's a bunch of that out there. And if you want bad copies of that, look on the eShop and PSN and all that, because there's a bunch of people making that kind of shit.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah.
Anything gets popular, there's a clone that comes out soon. But yeah, let's get to the news. We got some dates here. There's not a ton of these, because this wasn't that kind of week, especially with the game Summer Game Fest coming up. I assume we're going to see less and less of big things getting announced. But yeah, first up here we got the newest Yoinksoft game, Dark Scrolls, is coming out May 28th for Switch and PC. New Devolver Digital published game, so that looks like that should be pretty good. Described as an action platformer that fuses shoot 'em up style chaos with roguelite progression. and all that, so that could be a pretty good one of those.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we got also here coming out one day later, Mina the Hollower.
Finally.
Finally got a date. Yeah.
And look who was right. It's coming out on in May.
There you
I don't
go,
know, I
you got
remember you saying April, Brandon. No, I said I was thinking that it was going to fall out of April eventually.
I don't know. We'll go back to the tape.
No, don't do that. That'll make that then I'll be wrong.
We'll
That's the
take it.
point. But yeah, this will be coming out here in a few weeks. The newest game from Yacht Club Games in a handful of years.
Yep.
But yeah, it looks really good from playing the demo.
Oh yeah.
Which I tried to check out the Steam demo again, maybe continue where I was left off, and boy, they deactivated that.
Oh yeah.
I was like, oh, that's great. I'm pretty sure I can play it on my PS5 or Switch just as fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's looking like that should be a really good game, and I've filled out my, since I backed it, I filled out my survey to pick a
Yeah.
version.
Yeah, it's gonna be $20 too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Which is a pretty reasonable price for what it's supposed to
Yeah.
offer for content.
Yeah. Especially when you consider the fact of how much bigger it is compared to Shovel Knight.
Yeah, the $20 price definitely came off as a surprise to me, especially considering that, I've been reading things like, oh, Mina definitely needs to be a hit or else Yacht Club is going to be in the dumpster or things like that. And I don't know about you guys, but I am somebody who will gladly spend 40 on Mina just based on what I've
Yeah.
seen and played already. So 20, yeah, that one definitely seems worth it. If it comes out physically, I'll definitely buy that too.
There is
Even.
go they have said that there's going to be a physical release, but it'll be later.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that.
'Cause they wanted to go ahead and get the digital release out as soon as possible.
Yeah, they definitely hit. This was a Kickstarter game too, right? So,
Yeah, it was.
yeah.
And as for like their financial situation, I read somewhere that they needed to sell about 200,000 copies of this game for
Oh,
to
it's gonna be
stay
over a
in the
million.
black. And yeah, that's gonna that's kind of lowballing it. It's definitely gonna sell a lot more than that.
Not to mention it'll be out on every platform day one, so that
Oh
helps.
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that'll be fun to see that in a few weeks here. But yeah. That'll be fun. Let's see, we had some Nintendo news. As I mentioned, they had a direct that they announced like 10 minutes beforehand. Like, oh, we got this direct for Star Fox. Everybody's like, oh, this is gonna happen. And yeah.
Yep.
They announced what they called Star Fox, which is actually a remake of Star Fox 64.
Yep.
Again.
Again.
It's
I think this is like the third time they've done this.
like every generation leads to a remake of that game, except the GameCube generation.
Because it seems like they keep trying to like restart the franchise for some, and for some reason it just it either it doesn't sell well enough or it just doesn't land critically.
Yeah.
Like they did it with
Or
like
both.
a Star Fox, what was it? Star Fox Assault.
Well, Star Fox Assault is a new game.
Well, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But like I'm saying, they keep trying to like restart the franchise for some reason, and
Yeah.
but like yeah, so first and foremost, the actual gameplay and the scenery and everything looks absolutely gorgeous, like
Yeah.
unbelievably beautiful. They're doing a lot of like trying to like stretch out the story more, give you a better idea of like what this universe is and why people are doing what they're doing in it. I have this small underlying anxiety about the fact that, and have we've all played Star Fox 64, right?
Star Fox 64 was one of my most favorite games of all time. I used to
Okay.
beat that every day, so
Star
yes.
Fox 64 is a great game, but you said I used to beat it every day. Star Fox 64 is not a long game. Like, at all. You could very easily beat it in. There are speedrunners who've beat it in, like, under an hour.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of worried about, is this game going to be able to have the kind of longevity that they want it to have?
I think it will. As I mentioned, like I used to beat this game every day until I was able to like medal every planet in the Lylai system. And with what they're doing with this Star Fox remake, there have been a lot of quality of life changes that will make that a whole lot easier. They've included challenges for all the worlds, and after you've beaten them, you can go back to them specifically. Whereas in the original, or in Star Fox 64, you had to go back to them in order. And that obviously used up a lot of time. My thing is, and I think like it's going to be like the main theme coming out, is there's been a lot of issues and complaints about the art style.
Yeah, that's
That'll
what I was
like
fixing to get to.
weird a lot of people out. I don't think the length of this game will be affected all that much, aside from the fact that they've added cutscenes to really make the story more whole. And you know what? Like, as basic as Star Fox 64 and everything it was about the remake of that story, it was a solid story. So, making it more cinematic in that way is definitely interesting. I loved what they did with the prologue by showing, the demise, if you will, of James McCloud and, Pygma Dengar defecting and whatever it may be. But yeah, like the main thing to me is whether it'll be financially successful after what we saw. After what we saw happen with the other Star Fox games, whether it be Star Fox Zero, up to this point, no Star Fox game has sold. Like, if you thought Metroid wasn't very good in sales, Star Fox doesn't even come close to Metroid. So that's going to be the interesting thing. And the part that is really confusing about it, and this is par for the course for Nintendo, is this game has obviously been rumored for a while. Nate the Hate has had a hell of a track record. But the way that Nintendo promoted Star Fox in the Mario Galaxy movie, and Fox was awesome in that movie. Not to mention, they even showed like an anime style cutscene to introduce who he even was. And after the movie came out, it led to a whole lot of, like, at least on my feeds, a lot of social reels of people playing Star Fox 64 on NSO with the kids for the first time. And the weird part here is that over the course of, the last 6 weeks, we have seen Star Fox in three different art styles. And, being our most critical selves, the one that we saw in this remake of the game is the one that's not the most visually attractive. And it makes you wonder, like, again, I'm not a kid, so I'm not going to be the one that's going to say, oh, like, the kid's not going to buy the game. But because the other thing is, this game is $50, which in Nintendo's mind is a budget title. So, yeah, like, it can go any which way. At the end of the day, like, again, this is one of my favorite games of all time. The gameplay looks absolutely fantastic, and I can't wait to play.
Plus, you're going to have online multiplayer, so that also helps.
And then, like, just to go back to like what this game actually represents, like, I think I picture this as sort of Star Fox's last chance to really hit the mainstream, or not really mainstream, but really hit the market in the way that Fire Emblem Awakening did, because Fire Emblem back then was in danger of being like, kaput as far as America goes. And Fire Emblem Awakening on what was it, DS or 3DS? I don't remember which it was for, but that really hit the mark. And as a result, we've gotten a Fire Emblem game like every 3 years. So it's really, really possible for it to happen with Star Fox as well, because this engine looks like it's something that Nintendo can just continually iterate off of.
As for me, the art direction doesn't bother me that much. I will admit that's at least as far as like some of the side characters do look kind of scuffed, but Fox himself looks completely fine. Falco also looks fine. Slippy definitely looks a little cursed, but that's because, he's a frog and frogs already kind of look cursed anyway.
I do want to point out that I actually have no issues with the art style. Like, I figured like a lot of the complaints are very much what we've seen out of, Wind Waker when that game was initially unveiled, and Nintendo didn't give a shit, and it ended up being like one of the, most prominent Zelda games of all time. And I can see that happening with Star Fox, but we'll never know. Like, we live in a world where people in Animal Crossing kick out the villagers because they're ugly. So.
One of the I will say, like, one of the big issues I've been saying is you do very briefly get to see Cat Monroe show up, and Admittedly, she looks a little bit scuffed, but that in part has to do with the fact that, it's a transmission, so, it's kind of coming through staticky. But basically, she looks like someone that, would actually knife you in a dark alley, which, the actual Cat Monroe is supposed to be about. Yeah, it doesn't really bother me that much. Yeah, honestly, I'm excited to play it.
Yeah, this is day one for me. So don't get that wrong.
For me, I never really cared about Star Fox after the Super Nintendo version. That's the one I rented probably at least once or twice, and just really liked that, but never bothered with it on N64 or any of the other versions. Like I played 64 on the 3DS for like an hour or so, and was like, yeah, that's fine. Moved on. So this really doesn't do anything for me, and the art style for the characters really doesn't add any benefit to that. But yeah, seems like it'll be a good enough game for the Star Fox faithful. Though I do find the game chat feature in this pretty interesting,
Oh
which is
yeah,
essentially like
the
their YouTuber kind of mode.
Yep.
Essentially, you can recreate the classic "What's up" commercial in Star Fox now.
Yeah.
Because yeah, that's you essentially can do your webcam feed while playing the game, and everybody that's hooks up their camera will be able to essentially personify one of the characters. And like as they're talking and making noises and all that, it tracks with their mouth and their face and all that.
Which whoever it was they got to program that, seriously, kudos to you, 'cause compared to like a lot of what your standard VTuber models are, those are actually a lot more expressive.
Yeah, and Pat mentioned it in Discord, and you're sort of like going off of that a little bit. Whoever developed that system, if they're only on a contract, VTubers will spend hand over fist to be able to work on something with that person. If they're, full-time employed with Nintendo, yeah, I think they've got to make it either way. So,
And I think there's been sort of middleware tools for this kind of stuff for a while. Because I remember, I forget who it was. I think it might have been Danny O'Dwyer posted a video from one of Giant Bomb's videos where Brad Shoemaker was messing with a like new Steam, app thing that is essentially that kind of thing where it takes your video of your face and adapts it to a variety of things, various creatures as well as like sandwiches and all that kind of stuff. Make for a pretty believable like face mapping kind of stuff to it, so it's not too surprising that they could figure this out in an interesting way. But yeah, that'll be an interesting release when that comes out, June 25th, I think it is. But yeah, that'll be a thing that people complain about for a while, and then just move on. Because it's Star Fox, and the audience for those games have typically been pretty limited. They're not huge sellers, which is why they barely make a game a generation. When they did Star Fox Zero, they're like, we're gonna take a while and wait a while on that. That was sort of one of the worst games coming out of that Platinum Games era, where there were multiple teams of doing a questionable amount of quality stuff out there at times when they weren't the A team. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, that's your big Nintendo news. The other thing that followed that up is that the Nintendo Switch 2, as well as some other stuff, is getting price increases in the near future. They have different regions and different items and services getting increases in different territories. In Japan, the Japanese language only Switch 2 is going up in price by about 20%. And the Switch models, all three of them are also going up in price. About like 25%. to 33% for most of these here. And I think Nintendo Switch Online is also increasing in price. Both the, I guess, all tiers here. The regular one going for, the 1 month, 3 month, 12 month are all going up, as well as the family membership, and then the Switch Online Plus expansion pack also going up in price for that. And I believe South Korea is also supposed to be getting price increases for Switch Online, but they have not announced when and what sort of increase that's going to be. But for the rest of the world, it's just the Switch 2 that is getting a price increase. So for the US, that is going up from $449 to $499. It's the same price as the Mario Kart World Bundle, which I believe has been phased out at this point. So whatever's out there is out there. But that won't happen until September 1st. I believe the Switch and Switch 2 increases in Japan start on May 25th, so about 2 weeks from now. And the Nintendo Switch Online increases in Japan are effective July 1st. So they're giving people a decent amount of time here to make their decision if they're going to take the plunge now, save some money. In Canada, goes up, the Switch 2 goes up from $629 to $679. And then in Europe, I guess on the My Nintendo store, the price there is going up from 469 to 499 euros. So yeah, some pretty sizable increases here, especially early on. And it seems like the statement that Nintendo put out essentially said this is not covering the entirety of the increased cost for the various components in the Switch 2. So there may be, price increases coming in at a later date, maybe trying to hold off until the end of the year at most. Whatever they can. But yeah, they are certainly trying to mitigate the increased costs right now with these smaller increases, but it may not be the end of it. And yeah, the interesting thing is they put out, this was the end of their fiscal year, so they announced that they almost hit 20 million units sold for the Switch 2 in its first year, first 9 months technically, but along with that, they, since they're increasing the price, they're basically forecasting down from that, saying they're expecting to get like 16.5 million units sold. So that even they realize that, this kind of increase, even on a huge one, is still likely to affect their ability to sell more units. So yeah.
This obviously is not a fun announcement. A price increase, unfortunately, as of the last couple of years, has become the norm as economic conditions continue to like push these decisions. Obviously, like these publishers can afford it and whatever it may be, and it's unfortunate that the customers have to end up just paying the difference for all these problems. But at the same time, like looking at what happened last year in regards to the Switch 2 launch. Like, they announced their price. We already had our reactions there. Some of us thought it was way more expensive than we thought it would be. But at the same time, like the Switch 2 also ended up being, more powerful than anybody expected. So it kind of made sense from there. And there was a bit of time where we didn't know how much it would cost, primarily because of tariffs really taking things another level. And if you remember, Nintendo did sue the United States based on the unruly tariff rulings. And then as a result, they've also been sued by some consumers a couple weeks ago. So yeah, it's been an absolute mess. And yeah, like this sucks for everyone. But at the same time, like just looking back at the way things were last year, like I'm actually impressed that it took more than a year for them to go ahead and increase the prices. I just wish that there was like some sort of, not really a promise, but like some sort of update to like any of the hardware to better reflect things, whether it be a better battery or something like that. And unfortunately, like we're not going to see any of that happen. In regards to the whole apology Nintendo has made and promises of a robust software lineup, like To be frank, their lineup has been quite solid. I don't think it was anywhere as cool as the initial lineup for the Switch 1, but at the same time, like, we've seen more exclusives on the Switch 2 in this first year than we've had for, the PS5 or Xbox Series X in their first 3 or 4 years. So it is that. At the end of the day, like, this increase doesn't happen until September 1. So, there's plenty of chances to save up if you really, really want to switch to. I think you can personally still wait, like people did for the PS5 and Xbox Series X. But yeah, like, I hope there is a world where we see things go back down. But the one thing that really upsets me, aside from the fact that we are seeing these increases, is the fact that a lot of this is happening because of the rapid growth of AI. And that's annoying to me. So because it's because of AI that we're seeing the RAM shortages and whatever it may be, and it's just rough to see.
Yeah. I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
Not really. I mean, I kind of saw this coming, but it still sucks.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the other big bit of Nintendo news. But yeah, after the Star Fox Direct, the Stranger Than Heaven showcase, whatever you want to call it, happened. Kind of give us a better look at that game, sort of what is going on with that. And it looks pretty neat. They showed off a bunch of the cast, which does include Snoop Dogg playing a character named Orpheus, as well as some other people that are smaller time actors playing a bunch of the characters here. And yeah, and one of the weird ones is they have legendary actor Bunta Sugawara in this game, even though he passed away some time ago. Yeah, it seems like they got consent from his family to use his likeness in this game.
It's possible, like, they had a contract at some point before he died, that he was gonna, like, do some in the game, and he died, then he passed away, and they were like, well, what do we do now? And they say, family says it is okay, go ahead and do it. So I guess that's what happened. But
I
yeah,
don't
it
know.
is a
From what I
little
can see, he
odd.
died in 2014. So, unlikely, but seems like an inspiration for this character, I guess. So, they do have somebody else voicing him for that. But yeah, this is a game that takes place over the course of 5 decades. Yeah, they say, let's see, San Francisco, 1915. Or no. Why is it talking about San Francisco? Yeah, the 1915 Kokura Fukuoka, 1929 Kure Hiroshima, 1943 Minami Osaka, 1951 Atami Shizuoka, and 1965 Shinjuku Tokyo, which is an interesting swath of cities, kind of focusing on two main characters and their relationship that changes over that time.
Eventually becomes the Yakuza franchise. 'Cause, like, there's, if you look closely, this is 100% a Yakuza prequel. But yeah, it's actually, I gotta say, it looks, I am absolutely fascinated by what I see, because for one thing, any type of, like, media about Japan in the early 20th century tends to be kind of rare, because that particular part of Japanese history was notoriously troubled. During the Taisho era leading into the Showa era, very, very extreme. It was extremely troubled because it was during that era, after Japan's was expanding outward, the militarists were slowly but surely taking over the Japanese government. The fact that there's a part of the game that literally takes place in Hiroshima. And, like, there's two different distinct parts. It's like part of it takes place in 1941 into not in not 1940 1943, and then going into 1951. They got to talk about it at some point, right?
Yeah.
And when I say it, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, they do mention here the biggest entertainment district in Western Japan set against the ever-rising tension of a world at war. I assume they'll go with that. And yeah, for 1951, bustling seaside getaway synonymous with tourism in post-war Japan. So they certainly will delve into some of the tension and all that in the wake of World War II.
And they like the especially like ethnic tension, which they actually do like bring up in the story a couple of times, and I'm like, which I mean, to be completely fair, you know, the Yakuza games do that too. They are, for all their reputation of being really goofy, which they can be, they do take a couple of subjects pretty seriously, and that's one of them.
Yeah, like Yakuza Zero is about the battle between the Japanese and Chinese, kind of mafias kind of going at each other over this property they're trying to get. That's kind of an interesting thing that's portrayed there.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure like one of the main protagonists in this game is an American.
I think it's half American.
Or well, he's Nisei, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah. Born to American father and Japanese mother.
So yeah, I'm definitely interested in seeing more from this game.
Yeah, this is definitely a game I've been looking forward to for quite a while. I did not watch this presentation yet, so there is a lot that I don't know. I just read a whole bunch of Cliff's notes. But yeah, like the points that you guys brought up definitely are things that I would definitely be interested in seeing. You know, whether it be things like, you know, events that led to different wars, you know, their version of Pearl Harbor or whatever it may be. But my main thing that I do have to flag is that while it does take place in Japan, like the Yakuza games, they pretty much have like neighborhoods exclusive to the Yakuza universe in general. That being said, I would love to see any sort of real world, table shifting things within this universe, because I haven't played all of them yet, but I haven't seen something where something that happened in the real world affected anything in Yakuza's Japan, except for the pandemic affecting the homeless shelter that was supposed to be in the Like a Dragon games. So yeah, it'll definitely be interesting seeing how real world effects happen here. The main thing, you know, as you mentioned, is this being a quasi Yakuza prequel. You know, it does make me wonder if this ends up being like a Tojo Clan Origins or whatever it may be, because you know the Tojo Clan has definitely done a lot of awesome and crazy things in the Yakuza universe. So it'll be interesting seeing things happen in that regard. You guys talk about a half American protagonist, which is interesting because we've had a lot of American antagonists, and yeah, definitely looking forward to things happening there. It's weird because as far as like tourism in Yakuza, it's the funniest thing because even though I love the Yakuza games that happen in Hawaii, just because of like how accurately they're depicted, it's like at the same time, you know, you're not gonna walk down Honolulu and all of a sudden get your ass kicked for no reason just because people looked at you. So, seeing like the tourism spike in, you know, the 60s to Japan is gonna be interesting as well. But yeah, can't wait to get my hands on this one, and I'm surprised that it's actually gonna make 2026 if it does happen.
Yeah, because it seems like they are aiming for winter.
Yeah,
They don't even really have a date or a month or even for this game.
It also could mean early 2027, but who knows?
Yeah. Which might be the better place for that game.
Yeah, GTA 6 and Yakuza could be an interesting overlap.
Yeah. But yeah, that seems like a pretty interesting game, and they showed off a bit of the combat that I almost kind of liken to a Xenoclash. Like it's very physics-y to a degree, whereas in, you know, Yakuza kind of there's not that much physics to it. Kind of very stilted animation for it. which causes a lot of frustration for people because it's not as reactive as you might want for that. So they definitely seem like they've got more of that going on here. You got melee weapons instead of, you know, just picking up random bikes and all that kind of stuff to hit people with. You got more hammers and bats and that kind of stuff to beat people up with that I think you actually do some upgrades to. You kind of get a bit more investment into those weapons, and they're not just throw away things, you know, the some goofy finisher animations. So yeah, looks like I got some interesting ideas. We'll see what happens with that. But that's it for the stuff that has any sort of date to it. But yeah, we got some more news here. Atari announced a new acquisition. In a weird way, they announced that they were acquiring the rights to the first five Wizardry games. That includes, Wizardry Proving Grounds of the Mad Overlord, which Digital Eclipse did a remake of 2 years ago. So that's not too surprising that they would maybe want to own that game outright. There's Wizardry 2, Wizardry 3, Wizardry 4, and Wizardry 5. They'll have very like D&D style names to them. And yeah, they put out these games over the course of the 80s and were kind of a pretty big deal, even though I think all of these early games were Western made. But that property ended up kind of being acquired by a Japanese company, and then they became like a staple of Japanese RPGs, so much so Wizardry is essentially one of the main influences of a lot of your classic JRPGs. That and like D&D kind of being two of the biggest influences for that stuff. And yeah, so that's a bit of your JRPG history here. So much so that a lot of the more recent Wizardry games are all made by Japanese companies. This guy's one of those weird properties that has been made by a variety of companies, essentially. And so that's neat that Atari has the rights to those games. The weird thing here is it seems like the way they were describing their acquisition of these games sort of implied they got the rights to the IP itself. They describe here many other Wizardry-related video games, contract rights, and other related intellectual property. But then, they had to contact Atari and sort of figure out like what's going on here. Draycom is the team that's the company that owned the Wizardry IP up until this selling of some of the IP rights here. Say Atari has not acquired the rights to the Wizardry IP. As Atari described it as the underlying intellectual property. But then Atari put out their own statements. Then they acquired the full rights to the first five Wizardry games and the underlying IP behind them. Which are considered to be formative Wizardry titles and blah, 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 blah. I think they're saying like they own all the rights that are needed to publish those without need to work with Draycom, I guess, again, on that. But Draycom owns the Wizardry trademark and probably the rights to the other games for the time being. So there's a little more here if you need to do that, but yeah, that's a neat addition to their library of titles. Things that they probably will remake those other games as well. So, yeah. Then, we got one more bit of Nintendo news. That's, Takashi Tezuka, a director of many of Nintendo's classic titles, is retiring of June 26th. He's currently an executive officer at the company, but has been a game designer for many of the Zelda and Super Mario World games. Directed Yoshi's Island, Super Mario Brothers Wonder was a producer for that. So he's been doing game work for a long time. But seems like he is ready to retire and kind of probably take a break.
I mean, dude's worked crazy hard over the last, 30, 40, 50 years.
Yeah, it started in 1984, so just
Yeah.
over 42 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tezuka's a legend. It goes without saying that he's done a whole lot for Nintendo and the industry in general, and just about everything as far as the fun factor in gameplay. And obviously he hasn't like taken the front seat that guys like Aonuma, Miyamoto, or even Sakurai has. But yeah, it's definitely nice to see one of these guys go ahead and retire. Miyamoto has taken more of an advisory senior role as of late, and he's the elder statesman now. So it's nice seeing that the game industry has found ways to keep these people quote unquote youthful, and it's obviously a stressful job these days, but shout out to everything that Tezuka's done, and hopefully he has a happy retirement.
Yeah, I'm looking at his works list in the 10-year period from 86 to 95. He directed The Legend of Zelda, Super Mario Bros. The Lost Levels, Super Mario Bros. 3, Super Mario World, The Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past, The Legend of Zelda: Link's Awakening, Super Mario All-Stars, and Yoshi's Island.
These are all bangers. They're all
Yeah.
bangers. So.
Dude has not directed a bad game.
Yeah.
The only one you could say is bad is Super Mario Brothers 2, The Lost Levels, but that's only in comparison to everything else he worked on.
Yeah, and I would not call that bad either. Yeah, that was.
Infuriating and unfair, maybe, but
Yeah. Really fucked up game, but not bad.
Yeah, it was a game for people that thought Super Mario Brothers was easy. He's like, oh yeah, we're gonna put a poison mushroom that chases you.
If I remember correctly, I think Super Mario Brothers 2 was based on the arcade version of Super Mario Brothers that they made, that they intentionally made like more difficult than the original, and that sort of developed into that. But yeah, that game is. It's a, if you've ever wanted to know what is it like to play a video game that actually hates you.
Yeah, and has like invisible blocks and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's Nintendo hard, and then there's the real Mario Brothers too, so.
Yeah, and of course he's worked on a bunch of stuff as a producer and supervisor and all that. Basically every Mario and Zelda game and a bunch of other Nintendo stuff since then. So yeah, he's touched a lot of stuff at
Yeah.
Nintendo, so yeah, it'll be sad to see him go, but he's, made a lot of cool games that are worth checking
Yeah.
out.
And now the question comes, like, who's going to succeed him? Because that guy has a track record that is, I'm pretty sure, unparalleled in the industry.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think it's about succeeding. I just think it's about, just getting their quote unquote young talent and just filling the roles because the new
Yeah.
games haven't been bad either.
No.
So,
It also, of course, brings up the question is like, okay, so what's Miyamoto going to do now? I mean, to be
yeah.
fair, Miyamoto's mostly just been a consultant for the last decade or so.
Exactly. Like, I don't think, I mean, quote me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember the last time Miyamoto has actually had his hand on the development for a game in a while. I think Star Fox Zero might have been the last one where he's had a higher role. And
And we
we know
saw
how that
how
one
that
went.
ended. So,
Not to say
yeah.
he's bad, like everyone just has the rough parts every now and then, and yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's some big news for Nintendo. But let's get to some more stuff here. Microsoft is saying that they are stopping work on Copilot's AI program app, I don't know, for Xbox. They're also stopping the mobile app that they're working on as well, which seems like a big deal, but also remember their next platform is a hybrid console PC. So it could easily be like, we're not working on the console Copilot because you'll have PC Copilots all over the Project Helix. So there's very much some interesting language here that seems like they could easily still have Copilots, even just call it a different name. Because they showed that off as recently as GDC, to which people are like, this seems pretty stupid for a thing that's people don't need in their system, especially if it's taking resources away from everything else that's going on. But yeah, they're also tying this into Asha Sharma and her be the big champion for this, which is like, I don't know that that's sort of the big deal that it seems like, because it could easily turn into something else happening AI-wise. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see, but for now, it seems like a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll find out more, because I think they essentially put out their GDC presentation as a video on their YouTube channel, so you can see a little bit more about what they have in store for the new platform, which is all going to be very technical and not all that oriented towards people that don't understand all the tech behind it. So there's that for your Xbox news of the week.
All right.
But yeah, as I mentioned, the fiscal year ended for a bunch of companies, and EA is one of those who seems to have ended the fiscal year with a record performance. Underpinned by a successful Battlefield 6 launch, you know, which comes in spite of them laying off a bunch of people that worked on that game a few months ago. So maybe that helped them out in that sense. But yeah, it's hard to not see the irony of having, you know, arguably their best year ever in the wake of laying off tons of people still at this company. And they're about to get gobbled up by the Saudis here later this year, it seems like. So yeah, not really a positive thing here.
Yeah, it's just a rough going all around. I've talked to a few of my friends at EA during GDC, and they're just like shrugging. They're just like, you know, going through work, hoping for good things to happen. And I don't know. Like, and then, again, like Battlefield 6 of all teams having layoffs. yeah, that shouldn't have happened, but what are you going to do? Just got to hope for the best.
Yeah. Let's see. Here's some interesting news. So there's a Paranormal Activity game that was in the works, Paranormal Activity Threshold. Seemed like it wasn't too far from getting released, but the developer, Darkstone Digital, particularly Brian Clark, who was sort of one of the primary developers on it, had to cancel the game because it seems like Paramount wanted to pull their support for it. Would not allow them to get a delay so they can, you know, finish up the game proper and get it out versus, you know, rushing whatever work needed to get done and probably putting out a worse game for the wear. Brian Clark put out a statement here saying, "Hello, indie and horror friends. For a while now, I've been hard at work on my next game, Paranormal Activity Threshold. I cannot thank everyone enough for the wildly positive reception I received at PAX. It's been a long time since I released Mortuary Assistant, and I was thrilled to see people enjoying more of my work. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Your support means the world to me, and it's why I do what I do. This is why it's so difficult to share the development of Paranormal Activity Threshold has come to a close. Sadly, Paramount did not agree to extend development. This left me with two choices: rush through development and release a subpar product I would not be proud of, or request we go our separate ways. I chose the latter." So yeah, his publisher, DreadXP, did buy him on this as a solo indie, which is good to see. As it says here, "Proudly, DreadXP stood by me every step of the way. We parted ways with Paramount amicably. I was honored and even considered to work on an IP I love so much. So this chapter ends for me, but I'm not going anywhere. I may need a small vacation. I'm excited and eager to return to my corner of horror that you all have so generously allowed me to occupy." So yeah, it's like, well, it's going to be a while before you see whatever he's working on next. So he's going to need a little break. I imagine going through this kind of thing takes a lot out of you, having worked on a thing that is not that far from launch and having to cancel it because the IP holder is not interested in continuing to support the game. It's got to be a frustrating experience. So yeah, just seeing Paramount's In their current form seems not great for game stuff. So yeah, that's a Paramount news of the week. But yeah, then we got some other news here. If you remember when Little Big Planet 3 got shut down, especially the online servers, because they were having server issues with DDoS attacks and such, it seemed like they just could not recover from. There was a fan project that was, you know, trying to bring back online support for Little Big Planet 3 with private servers, so that you could, you know, play the game with other people and, you know, share creations and all that.
Yeah.
But it seems like there's an ulterior part of this story that, as they were getting ready to release this, some allegations came out that the people here, they say, let's see, Little Big Planet content creator A, where announced this thing called LBP Online. By downloading a file to a USB drive and plugging it into your PS4 or PS5, you can reportedly download a custom app that would allow you to access privately hosted servers. Little Big Planet 3, and you didn't even need to jailbreak your PlayStation to pull it off. Well, then allegations, it was supposed to launch May 4th, and that obviously passed, and it's not out. And it seems like the reason for that is because a post on the Little Big Planet subreddit posted allegations that IE and some others, a user known as Epic, they were both working on this LBP Online project, were two of the people behind the DDoS attacks that took down the PS3 and PS4 versions of Little Big Planet 3, as well as the Vita version of Little Big Planet. Yeah, it's not super airtight evidence, but this guy posted a Google Drive containing 72 files of supposed evidence against this creator that surfaced on the subreddit a couple days later. The most damning piece of evidence is a YouTube video uploaded on June 9th, 2024, which allegedly shows IE and his cronies successfully DDoSing the servers for Little Big Planet Vita. And so, yeah, this information comes from somebody that is going by the name John. Hasn't been independently verified, but it seems, at the very least, it has gotten IE to sort of abandon this project in a way, and it's created this whole wild scenario of why somebody that wants to work on this kind of project was the one to help essentially ruin the games for everybody else and get their online support through constant DDoS attacks. And supposedly, the reason for that seems like, by a quote that they posted, they felt like LGBT people were ruining the game with pride flags.
It's always that one asshole.
Yeah, so a game open to all kinds of people was apparently too open for this person. Felt like they had to wipe the game off the face of the map, of the internet. So, yeah. Just kind of a wild story here that I felt like needed to be said. Was, in case you were wondering, seemingly what happened with Little Big Planet's free server situation. How that kind of goes into places that you would not have expected.
Yeah. Some people are just weirdly petty.
Yep. Speaking of weirdly petty, Build a Rocket Boy, the studio has laid off a bunch of people, seemingly the majority of the studio, shortly after they released their update that adds the mission. It seems like it supposedly outs the saboteurs of Mind's Eye's launch, I guess. They've laid off roughly about 170 members of the studio, which was about 250 people before that. So supposedly there's about 80 people left. And so, yeah, people have linked a bunch of the people through LinkedIn to figure out who's no longer working there, and includes a lot of people across different departments.
Yeah.
And especially the social media team that worked on the Mind's Eye Discord. said that their roles at the studio will be ending this week. As they wrote, just popping in to share that tomorrow will be my last working day with Barb.
Mm-hmm.
It's been an absolute pleasure and a genuine honor to be part of this community. Yeah. So, yeah, that whole saga, still not going great.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there's no way they're getting a Cyberpunk-style 2.0 mm-hmm. turnaround for this game. Even the things they've been doing still really haven't made any sort of mark on it, so, yeah. Seems like they're just going to slowly bleed to death while the execs probably take a nice payday along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else suffers.
Yeah.
So there you go. Let's see, we got this studio, if you remember CCP Games, the makers of EVE Online.
Mm-hmm.
They've been owned by Pearl Abyss for quite a while at this point. But it seems like they have agreed to a deal with Pearl Abyss to kind of sell the developer back to the former CEO of the studio. Mm-hmm. And that's cool to see. And mm-hmm. in the wake of that, they're also changing the name mm-hmm. of the studio. And it seems primarily because they would no longer like to be confused with the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah.
the new title okay. is Fenris Creations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as they've said, there's been a growing brand collision between the studio and the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah.
It is a growing collision. It's a fight I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to fight the Chinese Communist Party over who is the CCP.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Chinese Communist Party doesn't think of itself as a CCP. It's yeah. a Western construct. They refer to it by a Chinese name.
Yeah.
They're not called the Chinese Communist Party in our home country of Iceland either. We call it the Communista Flokkur Kina in Icelandic.
Mm-hmm.
But they also mentioned that yeah, I've seen reporters write stories about us where we are literally referred to as the other CCP. We have CCP employees going to the U.S. and being questioned over the company's name. Good things, yeah. but I can sense where this is going. And so, yeah, as Fenris is going indie again, they're changing their names and making a clean break.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Fenris Creations is a reference to Norse mythology,
mm-hmm.
but also a nod to a board game the company published back in 1998.
Yep.
That also ties into EVE Online. So, yeah. Some good news and some weird news part of that. So, yeah. Good to see. And then also in good news, Double Fine is unionizing at Microsoft.
Yes.
Becoming the latest team there that is unionizing. They have filed a petition with the National Labor Relations Board on May 7th
mm-hmm.
on behalf of 42 regular and part-time workers. They're seeking an election alongside a request for voluntary recognition from Microsoft. So hopefully that goes through. But we'll report whenever their vote goes and see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that's going to be done within the next few months. But we wish them all the luck there. So yeah, some good news at Microsoft. Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Double Fine is a, you know, it's definitely an asset to all of gaming. You know, if Microsoft were to do anything unfortunate to them, you know, hopefully they have their defenses up. You know, I've seen both good and bad things happening with unions, and hopefully Double Fine unioning up can definitely protect them in the long run, because they are definitely an asset to all things gaming. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything to add except... yeah, where the world of video gaming is much better with Double Fine existing.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go for that. And let's get to the dumbest news of the week.
Mm-hmm.
GameStop's CEO wants to buy eBay.
Mm.
Despite the huge difference between their valuations of their companies. GameStop is currently valued at $11 billion, while eBay is about $47 billion. So, you're like, okay, how is this going to work? So, like, even in their favor, they have claimed $20 billion promise of financing from a third party. That's still short with what they can offer. So the GameStop CEO, Ryan Cohen, gave an interview to CNBC earlier in the week that seemed to go pretty badly. Leaving the hosts and viewers dumbfounded as to what's going on here. Kind of just wondering, where is this money coming from? And he seemed to not have an answer for that, which is typically a bad way to try to acquire a company, especially when you're worth about a fourth of what they are.
It's like what money?
Yeah. And so, as some sort of stunt, he decided to try to auction off GameStop stuff on his eBay account, which did not go well. He seemed to be auctioning off a bunch of random things, like, here's a square of carpet from a store. And here's, like, signage, GameStop signage, stuff like that. It's like, yeah, you could make some money off of that. Or you're going to get billions of dollars from, who knows, but in the process of this, his account got banned permanently by eBay for the stunt here. And it seems like also partly that it seems like people are pretty sure that some of the items he was trying to sell were things from the Game Informer vault, which includes like a Fallout, a Vault Boy statue that had a prominent picture at the Game Informer office before it got shut down.
Yeah.
That very likely could be the same one, but could also be one that a random store got from Bethesda. As well as some other items that seems like the sort of things that only Game Informer would have had in their care. As Frank Civaldi was tweeting, who is one of the heads of the Video Game History Foundation.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things he was trying to sell is a copy of Sumo Fighter for the Game Boy. Seemed like something that only Game Informer would still have at this point. So yeah, that whole plan didn't go very well. And so then he had another interview with who was his Business Insider. He said one of his biggest drives in taking over the e-commerce titan is that he's lost the spark at his current job. Saying, I wasn't passionate about GameStop. I'm passionate about eBay. I believe in eBay's business. So it seems like he wants to acquire eBay because he's more interested in their kind of business than what GameStop is. That he's kind of lost interest in running GameStop, I guess, since he's made his money off of that with the meme stock stuff and you know, taking over as CEO. And in light of, you know, essentially at this point seems to be trying to hit the various goals that will get him bonuses more than really helping the company become a more financially viable company that can be, you know, better suited to last for more than the next few years as they, you know, been shutting down hundreds of stores across the country and selling off their foreign branches of retail chains and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's not a huge surprise that he doesn't seem to be that interested in being the CEO of GameStop, other than probably the money he's making as a result of that. Because, yeah, this whole thing of trying to acquire eBay just seems like a publicity stunt. I wouldn't be surprised if he leaves GameStop at some point in the near future.
Oh, yeah.
That's typically not what shareholders really want to hear.
Yeah.
So maybe this gives their stock some sort of temporary boost, that they're okay with that for a little while. So if you know of any rational place, it's the stock market that runs off of vibes now instead of actual facts. So yeah, there's your GameStop saga. I don't know if either of you have anything to add about it, but it's been pretty ridiculous.
It makes me wish the show Silicon Valley still existed so this can be parodied, because this is absolutely
legitimately.
Like, I can imagine a shareholders meeting being like, Ryan, What are you doing? I'm on eBay.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like a bit you would see in The Office.
Yeah, exactly.
Which would not make any sense, but the thing you do because you're like, oh, we got an episode to fuck around. But yeah, it's been sad to see. So yeah, that's I think gonna do it for the show this week, unless you guys have anything to add.
Nope. Fun times.
But yeah, that's gonna do it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon Danner for joining this week.
Always.
I will be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about as May continues on. Let me see what we got coming out here. Yeah, Directive 8020 is out this week on the 12th. That seems like one of the big things. My list here doesn't have much else on it, so we got a little break here for the most part until later in the month. When a bunch of stuff starts coming out in the second half. But yeah, that's gonna do it. So if you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers who are also tired of GameStop's antics.
Yeah.
The fun thing is they shut down the stores and I think don't remove them from their list of stores on their website. It's the one that I would normally go to got shut down and it still shows up on their store listings. It just has hours of TBA because it doesn't have hours. But yeah, that'll do it for the show. Thank you all for tuning in. We hope you'll see us or listen to us next time. Thank you all, and have a good one.
Bye.
See ya.